You are listening to an edited version of Get Radio's Business Brunch, which airs every Sunday at 11 a.m. on DAB Digital Radio across Oxfordshire and online at getradio.co.uk. For copyright reasons, we cannot play the songs mentioned in the show. But for more info and Business Brunch related content, head over to getradio.co.uk.
Get Radio's Business Brunch with Ben Thompson, sponsored by We Do HR Support. Leave your HR to the experts so you can focus on what you do best.
Good morning. This is Get Radio and welcome to the Business Brunch with me, Ben Thompson, owner of Thompson & Terry Recruitment. Every week, I'm really, really delighted to be joined by experts of the Oxfordshire business community, business leaders who share their stories, their expertise, their knowledge of business with you, the listener. And hopefully you've got your notepads, as always, to write lots of top tips as we're talking. And today's going to be no different. We are joined by John Ellard of Raymond Parts, and we're joined by Natasha Ellard of Urban Element. And together, we're going to be talking about how the businesses have collaborated and also the concept of the husband-wife business experience. So really, really looking forward to that. This is the Business Brunch with me, Ben Thompson. We'll be introducing our two guests after this. Get Radio. Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. Today, I'm really, really delighted to be joined by John and Natasha Ellard, who are going to be sharing their story and their expertise with you, the listener. So let's start. John, would you like to go first? Tell the listener all about you.
By all means, and thank you for the opportunity, Ben. My name is John Ellard. I'm co-owner at Urban Element, and I'm also the managing director of Remanufactured Parts, or the short version, Reman Parts. We're basically a remanufacturing company that will take any bus, truck or coach part, repair it and return it to our clients. So it's that whole circular economy piece of take, make and reuse rather than take, make and throw away. You only need to look around on the roads to see a truck or a bus or a coach. That company needs to keep its vehicle on the road as much as possible. And we're there to do that by remanufacturing any part that they might need.
Amazing. No, thank you. And Natasha, do tell the listener all about you and indeed Urban Element.
Sure. My name's Natasha and I'm the managing director at Urban Element. So I run Urban Element on a day-to-day basis. And Urban Element is a digital marketing agency. And we tend to work with businesses that are great at what they do. So they might be an expert within their sector. But when it comes to their marketing, they might be concerned that they're not generating enough return. So that's sales, leads or inquiries on their marketing spend. Or they might just be a little bit confused as to where to start. Should they be investing in their search engine marketing? Should they be spending on Google Ads? Should they have a presence on TikTok or Snapchat or Instagram or Facebook? Or they might just be struggling with a lack of capacity. So internally, they might be wearing lots of different hats and therefore marketing gets deprioritized and there's not kind of a consistent marketing strategy that's fulfilling on their marketing objectives consistently. And that's where we come in. And we've been doing that for sort of 20 plus years now. So that's sort of what we do at Urban Element.
Amazing, amazing. And look forward to going more into that over the next hour. So thank you. Natasha, I am going to stay with you, if that's okay, for one of the two most difficult questions of most shows, which is a song choice. So you have kindly chosen a song for our listeners this morning. What is your song choice and why have you picked it?
So I've picked Cowboys and Angels by George Michael. And I think it's just a song that kind of has stuck with me really from my childhood. So we used to listen to a huge amount of 80s music at home. And particularly my mum was a big fan of George Michael. So it's just a song that stuck with me that I love still now.
This is the Business Brunch podcast from Get Radio, sponsored by We Do HR Support. Leave your HR to the experts so you can focus on what you do best.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. Following that great tune by George Michael, chosen by Natasha, we are going to have a three-part roundtable discussion, exploring two great businesses and also John and Natasha's journey. So let's kick off the roundtable, starting with yourself, John, if that's okay. Talk to those listening at home a little bit about Urban Element in the early days, and I guess kind of how this collaboration has come about between the two businesses.
Okay, well, in a nutshell, as Tash mentioned earlier, Urban Element's in its 20th year. I was one of the founders. If you'd met us 20 years ago, we'd have been doing enterprise level applications for the banking sector, so working with Deutsche Bank, Goldman Sachs, and JP Morgan. We all know the banking crisis hit in 2009-2010. Urban Element had to diversify or reposition itself quite quickly. And from that sort of year point of 2010, we started pushing search engine optimization and websites. In other words, not just building a kind of bespoke or reference website, but building a website that was going to get top of Google, generate leads, generate business for our customers. And the rest is history with regards to Urban Element, and you'll hear more from Tash about that. Remanufactured parts. For those that know me will think, how did John go from, you know, a marketing business into an industry for trucks, buses and coaches? And if I'm being completely honest, I was dangled a quite big carrot in June of last year. And after 23 years of being my own boss or being self-employed, I took my first salary job and was based up north in Chesterfield. And I was running a sales team and a marketing function for a company that was doing electronics remanufacturing. That came through them being a client of Urban Element. So the story actually starts with Tash, who signed the company that I then went and worked for. So perhaps, Tash, I can hand over you to explain how that part of the journey started.
Yeah, sure. So we started working with a company called Alliance Transport Technologies. That was in sort of 2021. And like John's mentioned, they remanufactured electronic components. Mm. And the first bit of work that we did for them was what we call keyword research and SEO sitemap. So the kind of organic search engine optimization piece. And we started on that process with them. So we started out doing what we call a digital marketing questionnaire. So that's just extracting a load of information from them. And then we go on to do the keyword research and an SEO sitemap, which we then applied to the website. And that was to gain them greater visibility in the search engines, which we did a great job of. But then what we found was while we were generating them lots of visibility and lots of inquiries, they weren't necessarily equipped to convert those inquiries. So they didn't have the kind of internal mechanisms set up in order to kind of deal with digital inquiries, because they're quite a traditional company, quite a traditional sector, the transport sector. And so they weren't familiar with kind of all of a sudden having inbound inquiries from digital activity. And I guess that's where you came in, John. They needed someone to come and help them actually then convert those inquiries.
Yeah, so at that point, Ben and listeners, I'd already transitioned out of Urban Element from a kind of director's role. And what I was doing is I was coaching four or five Oxfordshire businesses on how to do their sales and marketing. So I was almost like an interim sales and marketing director for five local businesses. The CEO of Alliance Transport Technologies sat me down one day and basically said, I think you're coasting. I think you've become complacent. I think you're too far in your comfort zone. Why don't you come and do something different? We're a 7 million turnover company. We need to get to 30 million in the next 3 years. I need you to come in and put in a sales function and a strategic marketing plan. Why don't you make the move, take the jump and come and be our sales director. After about 3 months of discussions, I did that. Started in June last year. Team of 70 people at the time. I had a business development team. I had a sales and marketing director to coach and work with. And we had four divisions within the business. It took me, if I'm being honest, probably 6 months to actually understand what they did, to understand the product set, to get my hands sort of underneath the car bonnet and understand the workings. And then I had 3 or 4 months of really enjoying it. So in my tenure there, I signed JCB, brought back online a project with Fraken, who are a fleet solutions company that looks after the Sainsbury's fleet. And all was going very well. We were, the remanufacturing side of the business was booming. The team were enjoying the work. We had new clients coming in. And that was very much largely down to the work that Urban Element had done. When I came in and I turned that sales function on, we had 200 inquiries, new inquiries coming in every 2 months. So we're averaging about 100 new inquiries per month. Wow. And that's from every person that had a truck or a couple of trucks in their fleet, right up to fleets of 100 vehicles. So that tap was already running. And my job was made a lot easier in that all I had to do was help convert that digital lead. Get the business developers to treat a digital lead different than they would perhaps a more traditional inquiry that comes in, and then upsell, cross-sell, and the rest is pretty straightforward when it comes to sales marketing. But, and this is where we get to, 10 months into me having a salary job, I was given my notice, and a couple of weeks later, I was made redundant. And in May last year, May this year, beg your pardon, the business went into administration. So having done 23 years self-employed without a salary, taking a salary job, going through that new experience, I did experience everything from being a new start to being made, given my notice to actually being made redundant, which was a shock to the system, Ben, as you can imagine.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you so much for that insight. There's lots of things to sort of unwrap there. And what I'll do is I'll go right back to the start, if that's okay, in terms of the learning piece. So I think that you rightly touched on the great work that Urban Element did in terms of getting those inquiries, but the sales team weren't necessarily in place to close the digital inquiry. Can you build on that point a little bit more in terms of, is that a common trait? Is that a common thing that you see in terms of marketing and sales not quite aligned? And what can businesses do to get that alignment in place?
Yeah, we see it all the time, I think. it's certainly not uncommon. And I think there's always a little bit of friction there between marketing and sales. And it's something that actually, I think probably sets us apart, Urban Element, because we not only have the kind of technical expertise, but then we also have that commercial acumen as well. So a bit like John was saying, we're getting very good at helping clients to actually understand, once they've generated inquiry, that next step, what then actually needs to happen with that inquiry. I don't know if you want to elaborate on that, John, because you've kind of been in that position with several of our clients.
Yeah, I think the best way to probably explain it is, and I'll talk about my experience in Alliance Transport Technologies as a kind of reference point, is you need the right culture, you need the right training, you need the right investment in place to actually give digital sales a chance of success. From day one, I'd be going into the board meetings, and search engine optimization, digital marketing, social media was at the bottom of the agenda. You'd get through a 2-hour meeting, and then you'd be given 5 minutes to actually talk about Google rankings, traffic to the website, number of inquiries, number of managed chats, number of e-commerce sales. And if the culture of the organization is to deprioritize the conversation around digital marketing, that will be widespread throughout the organization or the business. If you're not willing to spend time looking at it as the big boss, how are you going to expect your managers and your team to do so? And then it comes down to training. I mean, if you have an existing client pick up the phone and want to place a repeat order, you're going to be quite familiar with them. You're going to be quite friendly. You're probably not going to talk about all the benefits of your service or your product. You suddenly then have a business development team that are taking in a new inquiry, somebody that doesn't know your reputation, doesn't know how good your product or service is, but is asking for some initial information on the product or the price. if you don't give that background to who you are, if you don't talk about your success stories, if you don't talk about why this business should do business with you, you won't convert that lead. Dealing with a new inquiry is very, very different to dealing with a word of mouth referral or an existing client. And if the organizational business hasn't invested in the right IT, the right technology, the right CRM, the right telemarketing training, the right phone skills training, they just won't convert enough of that new business coming in from Google. And then if you're not converting it, when you get to a board meeting and you're talking about return on investment or where the sales have come from, there'll be another kind of bullet for their ammunition to say, actually, we shouldn't concentrate on new business. We shouldn't concentrate on digital marketing because it's not working or it's not converting. And it's the actual complete opposite. What they should be doing is saying, there's potential. This is where our new business is going to come from. Let's invest all those things that we just talked about. Culture, training, systems and procedures.
Absolutely.
I don't know if it summarizes the question, Ben, or not.
Yeah, no, really good insight. I think one of the things that I've heard a lot in terms of this show is that businesses want to be first on Google and they want to get those inquiries. And it's really, really interesting to see the other side of the coin in terms of converting. Natasha, I'm going to go back again. Apologies. You've both given such insight in the early parts. I want to build on them before we move on, if that's okay. The process that started in terms of that relationship, in terms of some of the tools that you used in order to, I guess, get the business to a high ranking on Google. Can you just build on what those tools are a little bit and what that really looks like? Is that okay?
Yeah, of course, Ben. Yeah. So a big part of what we do is search marketing. So it's that kind of keyword research, SEO sitemap. That's where we have a real wealth of expertise. So what we would typically do, like I briefly described, is kind of extract as much information as we can from the client. And then once we've done that, we go away and do a load of research. So there's lots of tools out there that you can use in order to do what we call in-depth keyword research. One of the ones, our preferred tool, is a tool called Zemrush. And I think what I've noticed over the years is often when we're talking to business owners, they think that people would find them via a certain keyword. Because they're in that sector, they're in that industry. But actually what we uncover is when we do the keyword research, there's not necessarily a huge amount of volume around the kind of words they thought people might be using. And that's always quite insightful because when you're in an industry, you tend to refer to things potentially using more jargon or slightly higher level than someone outside of your industry. So that's really insightful when we do keyword research. And we often uncover, actually, there's a lot more search volume around this term over here, which means the same thing. But if you were visible for that term, you'd get a lot more traffic than if you were visible for perhaps the term you were thinking people might find you via, you know, using that in a search. So it's really, keyword research is really, really fundamental to being visible on Google and getting that top spot. And you'd be surprised how many businesses don't actually lay those foundations with their website. So doing that keyword research and then actually applying it to their website is really, really important. And applying it using things like page titles and, without getting too technical, meta descriptions and making sure it's present in their URL. All those things are really important and are often overlooked, which is quite interesting.
No, really insightful. Thank you so much. I think it's time probably for a song, isn't it, John? So let's go to yourself for your song choice and then we'll continue the conversation.
You asked me earlier that, Ben, in front of Tash, and Tash wanted to know what I'd chosen as well, and I refused to say. And it's mainly because, Tash, I've chosen a song from when we got married. So when Tash finally gave in and said yes to my constant saying, will you marry me? And she said yes, and we got married. We had a song called Beneath Your Beautiful by Labyrinth and Emil Sandé. And that's the song that Tash brought down the Richer office to me too.
Oxfordshire Station. Get radio!
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. And before that very lovely song chosen by John, we've been speaking to John and Natasha about their journey. And I think both have shared such insight in terms of around the world of SEO, of course, but also that connection between SEO and sales and really the conversion piece. One of the things that I would really like to build on, John, now, if that's okay, is really kind of that personal journey of going from, I guess, a business owner, as you touched on, for more than 20 years to an employee and then the redundancy and really kind of that journey. And I would love just to learn kind of what happened next as well.
Okay, so I think it was a massive shock to me. I'd gone from being my own boss to working with Tash at Urban Elements as joint MDs to then becoming a consultant to other businesses. But throughout all that, I'm quite independent. It's kind of my decisions. I can do what I want. I can fly by the seat of my pants when I need to. And then I was suddenly put into a corporate world where I had a boss. In fact, I had one boss and then a few bosses above that boss. I had to report in a certain way. I had to go through induction. I had to go through training. I had to learn new systems and procedures. A massive culture shift for me was having to go from using Google Docs and Google services to actually using Microsoft and being on Teams and Excel and Word. And it was just after 23 years, I'd got a few bad habits and I probably wasn't the easiest person to mold into a role. There was also the fact that I was going to an industry that I didn't understand. I didn't know the product set. I've never sold a truck part or a bus part in my life. And I was going into a company where you have some of the most experienced engineers in the UK, and they're doing something that not many businesses do in the UK anymore. They're engineering. They are taking a unit that's got no use anymore and repairing it and getting it back into a vehicle. These were very senior people doing a very important job, and I might have been seen as the kind of fluffy marketing person that was walking in not knowing what an AdBlue pump was or an ECU or an instrument cluster. On my first day, I walked in and they said, "Oh, John, you're doing a TV interview." I said, "Well, I'm supporting with it." I said, no, you're actually in the interview." And I had the local council ask me about what difference remanufacturing was making to the automotive world. That was my first day into the job and I had to wing it. So there's a lot of challenges, but there's also a lot of nice things. The engineers and the team that I had and I was working with are brilliant people, amazing people. They were supportive. And over a period of time, I learned what the product set was. And as soon as I knew what the product set was and I could understand the benefits, you know, let's get a vehicle back on the road. Let's save that client a third on any of their part expense by giving them a remanufactured part rather than a new part. You know, going back to getting the vehicle back on the road, some of these parts take 6 months because there's a backlog. We could repair it in a week. And then the third one, and a lot of our companies or clients at the time saw it, but it wasn't necessarily the number one priority, but it's the planet bit as well, the environmental bit. You buy a remanufactured part, you're doing a big carbon saving. So you had that kind of get your vehicle back on the road, do that delivery that's making your business money, get people back on the bus and get that public transport working again. Do it cheaper than buying new parts. And then three, make an environmental impact. Once I knew the product set and I knew the benefits, I was back into my comfort zone and I was able to start doing what I was supposed to be doing, which was, you know, increase the sales coming into the remanufacturing side of things. And to give you an example of how, if you don't have somebody in the business that understands how to convert a Google inquiry, you're going to struggle. So somebody would ring into Alliance Transport Technology and say, "I've got a Scania, I've got a faulty electronic control unit, can you repair it?" And my team would deal with it. They would give them a price, ask a bit about what the fault was, get the unit, test it, report it, get it into repair, tell them what the repair success rate was likely to be, whether we've got a gold standard in it, a silver standard in it, or a bronze standard, where we can repair the unit and get it back to them. And that would have been how they dealt with it initially. When I got in, I said, "Look, ask a few more questions. What search term did they put into Google to find us?" Okay, they put in Scania and ECU repair. that means they may only know we just do Scania ECU repair. So when we send that unit back to them, say, did you know we also do Abloy pumps? Did you know we also do instrument clusters? Did you know we've also got this division? Did you also know that we've got field service? So that idea of treating the new inquiry or the new lead as a bigger prospect and getting the full product set across them hadn't been done before I came into the business. So again, if we go back to me personally, I was suddenly feeling good about myself again because I felt I was adding value. I knew the product set, I was working well with the team, I knew what the pain points were, I knew where we could provide benefits, and I could also add that kind of upsell or cross-sell so that the figures were looking better, which then meant when I was in that boardroom, I wasn't showing graphs that were showing Google rankings improving and traffic going up, stuff like that. I was also showing the ROI, the return on investment, saying this Google word or this keyword that we've got a ranking for, thank you to Urban Element, has actually generated us 10 new customers this week that have just spent £10,000 with us. But equally, the value of that customer going forwards, because they've got a fleet of 100 vehicles, is their lifetime value to us is £100,000. So we've just spent £5,000 with Urban Element. That's brought in 10 new customers. They spent £10,000, but over a year, they might spend £100,000. You start presenting those kind of figures or that kind of trend in a boardroom where you've got your chief financial officer, you've got your CEO, you've got your MD, you've got your HR director, you've got that whole boardroom. They suddenly start listening to you. And then suddenly the digital marketing bit of the agenda, the digital marketing moves up the agenda.
Natasha, I'm going to come across to you on that final point there that John was making, which I think is really, really valuable. When you talk to clients, how easy is it to put the commercial side behind it in terms of that piece that that John was talking about, in terms of spending $5,000 on SEO and actually, okay, yes, the orders might be $10,000, but actually the lifetime value is $100,000. And how do you have those conversations? And I guess to the business owner listening at home or in the office right now, who's thinking, do you know what? I've always thought about SEO. Urban Element have got a great reputation. What does it look like for me? Yeah, what would be your advice? Quite a big question there. Sorry.
Yeah, no, it's fine. So it's an interesting one actually, Ben, because I think it is a challenge to demonstrate that ROI for sure. And interestingly enough, through John's relationship with working at Alliance Transport Technology. So we were obviously already providing them a service. So we were providing search engine optimization. We were actually also doing their social media marketing for them. But with John then sort of sitting the other side as well, it actually enabled us to really up our game in that sense. So it gave us an insight that we'd never had before, which was what I would refer to as kind of client side. Mm. So we're agency side, and then John was sat client side. And he was saying to us, guys, I need to be able to demonstrate this to the board that actually what we're spending with you guys each month is generating the following in return, so that you know, they don't stop the spend, but also so I stop getting my ass kicked. and so it actually enabled us to really hone that expertise, which was a real benefit to us. And now what we can do is much more clearly demonstrate what that return is. So we've become very good at tracking inquiry levels, things like managed chat as well. So a lot of our clients use managed chat, and we want to know exactly what those chats are that they're getting each week, each month. We can track things like call inquiries, so the amount of phone calls that they've received from their websites. And we've really just become hot on tracking all of those things. But then the feedback loop is really important as well. So if we don't have visibility of what those inquiries actually sort of turn into later on down the line, then we need to have that information returned to us from the client. So we're always asking, okay, we can see you've had the following inquiry from your website. And I talk about the website because that's the glue that sort of holds it all together. So while we're doing search marketing and social media marketing, everything's always directed back at the website. And then what we want is to see, okay, what's that inquiry resulted in? So we'll always be talking to either the marketing team within the business or the owner of the business or potentially the head of sales, is to say, okay, right, what's that inquiry actually generated? Did it convert? If it converted, how much did it actually convert into? And that then allows us to really give complete transparency and visibility over what you're investing in your search and social media, and then what you're kind of getting in return for that investment.
Really good insight. John, I'm keen to explore a little bit more around making that transition from being a business owner to the point of employment. And I think one of the things I like to do on this show is to give real insight and give real advice. What would be your advice to a business owner listening right now who is thinking about it, potentially employing somebody that has run their own business? What can us as businesses do to really touch into that entrepreneurial talent and hire people in paid jobs with that background?
I think make the decision slowly, don't rush into it. I certainly found it a very difficult change. I'm 48, 23 years self-employed. Then I went into my first salary job. So I might be quite unique in that, but I don't think I am. I think if you're taking anyone that's run their own business, you're going to have challenges with them, because they're going to have to come in, they're going to have to follow your process, your systems. They're going to have to fit in with your culture, your training. They're going to bring ideas with them, but ultimately they've got to fit into your business and become part of it quite seamlessly, quite quickly, if they're going to be, you know, productive for you. And I don't think, certainly in my instance, that too many entrepreneurs can do that too easily. They've had it their own way. They've done things their own way. They might even have a bit of an ego about them. I'm not saying don't do it, but I'm just saying take the decision really carefully. Spend longer in the interview process, spend longer in the induction process. Just think that they're probably going to take twice as long to settle in and fit in than somebody that you've taken in from the job market that's, you know, used to being employed. Do things like DISC to work out what the personality styles are. There's other tools out there, but I've always sworn by something called DISC, where you work out what their kind of style of learning is, their style of communication is. Have weekly, if not daily, catch-ups with them in the first sort of 3 to 6 months. Make sure that the job contract is really tight, and that both the boss and the now employee, ex-entrepreneur, understands what their responsibilities are and what they're accountable for. I suppose what I'm saying is, do what you'd normally do with an employee, but do it as if you're, it's probably not the best way of saying it, but almost do it like you're on steroids. That is going to be, you know, a really, really super induction and training process for them.
No, really good advice. Thank you both for your thoughts so far. We'll continue the conversation after this.
Interviewing Oxfordshire's business leaders. This is the Business Brunch podcast, sponsored by We Do HR Support. Leave your HR to the experts so you can focus on what you do best.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. And today, really, really delighted to be joined by John and Natasha Ellard. And we've really been exploring lots of things, SEO, the connection between marketing and sales, and also John's own story in terms of 23 years of running a really successful business to go into to the other side. And I just want to build to the next part of the story, if that's okay, John, and really talk about, so you've been made redundant. Like, how were you feeling at that point, and what did you do next?
It's a difficult one. I was 10 months into the role, and for the last quarter I'd been feeling that I was performing quite well, so my targets were being hit. That when I suddenly got the phone call and they said, we're giving you your notice, but we want you to work your 2 months notice period, I immediately said, why have you come to that decision? Is it a done decision, or is it something we can talk about? And their explanation was the run rate on one of the big bus companies is not high enough. And what they meant by that is this particular bus company, which is a national player, wasn't placing enough orders through us. The reality was we weren't in contract with them anymore. The tender had ended, and we were currently in the process of securing a new tender. So it didn't make sense. So I was quite thrown by it. I wanted to have some more answers, and I didn't get any. I carried on work as normal. The following day, I drove up to Chesterfield and told my team, because I felt my senior team needed to know first. And I told them that I'd be there for the next 2 months working my notice period so that I'd ensure that they're okay. Within a week, one of my suppliers rang me and said, you guys have just served your first file for administration. I said, well, that's news to me. I'll check with the board. And the board told me that they had done that, but it was just because they were trying to get some more investment into the business or a potential buyer. And it was just almost due diligence to do it. A week later, the ex company filed for its an extension on that administration process that was denied. And very quickly, the business went into administration, making 51 people redundant, 20 in the first wave and then 21 in the second wave. And that's as quickly as it happened. I went from being given my notice thinking, I don't understand why, to suddenly being made redundant along with 51 other people. For the listeners, I'll give you a bit of background as I've learned more. The reality was one of the new products that they were trying to get to market was already 18 months too late to the market. So it was still in R&D rather than being on the shelf ready to sell. Another product, and again, it's common knowledge, so I don't mind saying it. There were some issues with this new product and the warranties started coming back in. The investment house, I think, lost its faith in the business. So you suddenly had a new product that hadn't got to market, so it was generating the business nothing. You had another product that had warranty issues, and those warranties were coming back by the truckload, excuse the pun, and you had the investors losing faith in the business. And the business itself was hard to sell because there's four divisions. You've got new parts, which I won't go into. You had remanufacturing, which was the division I was looking after. You had workshop and field service. And then you had this electric battery. It's very hard to sell a business when there's four divisions. You might be able to sell parts of it. But anyway, they couldn't find somebody to buy in the time that they had. And very sadly, it went into administration. And for some of those engineers that had spent 27 years, 13 years of their life very loyally working for that company, it was a much bigger issue and challenge than I had, because I was in a fortunate position that I could fall back to some of my old clients and pick up some work very quickly. So as soon as I found out about the redundancy, I approached one of my old clients, a company called Adept Graphics, and I picked up some work with them. Adept Graphics do fleet wrapping. So they'll go and wrap a load of trucks, vans, buses in a sustainable livery, which means that livery can be reused into other products. So you put livery onto a van, it looks pretty, it's your brand, it's a way of advertising, marketing yourselves. But when that livery comes to end of life, Adept Graphics can take it off and remanufacture it into traffic cones, Willington boots, or my favorite children's playground equipment. So Adept Graphics gave me some work straight away, which meant I could not relax, but think about what happened to the company and what a good next step would be. And the good next step, Ben, was to actually buy some of the assets from the administrators. And that was interesting in itself, because the asset that I wanted to buy was the domain, the website, email addresses, and the other digital assets. The administrators, throughout their whole process, and at this point they've been doing this administration process now for about 8 weeks, had not valued the domain, the website, the email, the social media channels. In fact, they didn't know how. So when I said I want to buy them, they said, we don't know if we can sell them to you because we don't know what they're worth. 2 weeks later, they said, we can't find anyone to value the digital assets of the business. Can you make us an offer? And again, nothing to hide here, so I'll let the listeners know. We spent £3,000, £500 on the domain, £2,500 on the website. If they'd come to me as when I was MD at Urban Element and asked me to value those assets, I would have valued those assets at about £150,000. Don't tell the administrators that.
Administrators, do not listen. Turn the radio off if you're listening live.
But that's reality. We paid £3,000 for that. The domain had great domain authority. It'd been there as a website for a good 13 years. Urban Element spent over 2 years optimizing the website, so it was ranking top of Google for every truck and bus part repair you can imagine. If you search DAF, MAN, Scania, Iveco, Renault, Volvo, ECU repair, instrument cluster repair, that site was ranking top. As long as that website didn't go down for any period of time, I was buying a fully functioning digital business. And that's what we bought. And I also luckily got one of our senior engineers to agree to take a bit of a punt and become full-time employed with us. And I also managed to persuade the ex-head of remanufacturing to also come on board. So I took on a very skilled engineer, John Lowe, 27 years repairing harnesses, wiring looms, lithium power storage solutions, and James Cox, 4 years at Alliance running that remanufacturing division. Suddenly I had the human resource that I needed. I had a website that as soon as we wanted to turn that domain and those emails back on, the tap would go on. The minute we turned it on, that tap was suddenly pouring leads again. And that's what happened at the beginning of October. So we bought, rather than it being a startup business, we bought a business that very quickly we've been able to turn on, and it's been generating inquiries. And there is a conversation to be had about where's Alliance Transport Technologies gone. Some of them ask that question. Some of them don't even ask that question because they've done a keyword search. They haven't searched Alliance Transport Technologies. They've searched a repair job. So sometimes we have to explain it, sometimes we don't. But the long and short of it is Remanufactured Parts Limited started in July, and we started trading or taking on repairs 1st of October. We are registered in Oxfordshire, but the workshop is up in Staveley in Chesterfield. That's important because that's where the talent pool is. So John Lowe is our first engineer. He lives 10 minutes away from the workshop. James lives a 15-minute drive away near Sheffield. But as we grow and scale up, the talent pool, those 21 other engineers that were part of that redundancy process, that's where they all are. Mm. So when we scale up and grow the business, we're going to need a Chesterfield location, as well as our head office in Oxfordshire.
Amazing. And it's just so great just to hear such a great end to that story, and such a great win-win. And I always think that that's the best form of business, as we've touched on earlier, is when actually the good people are having a good result. We are very much coming to the end of the show, but before the end, I am really keen to build on the husband-wife dynamic, if you don't mind me asking. And Natasha, I feel like it's your turn to jump in here in terms of you've worked together and built a really successful business. So can you just share with the listeners just your experiences and any kind of advice and tips around that? Is that okay?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's been an interesting journey, not without its challenges. And I think anyone that works with their husband or wife is probably aware of that. And we actually have a couple of clients that are in a similar position. And that's always interesting because we'll quite often meet with them. John and I will meet with them together. So, you know, we know Mel and Anthony at Dask Logistics are a client of ours. They're husband and wife and run the business together. And it is an interesting dynamic. I think what I've learned over the years is that a lot of it comes down to sort of having, I suppose, a kind of clear, what I would almost call upfront contract. So just an agreement to kind of who's responsible for what. And I think that can easily get overlooked, particularly if you're husband and wife, because you just kind of fall into this trap of, oh, we work together and we'll just continue to treat each other like husband and wife. But actually, I think it's really important to set very clearly defined kind of, I suppose, like you would with any team member, really. Mm. So the team all have, you know, job descriptions. And that's one of the things we fell into, is not giving each other a job description at the outset. And actually, in hindsight, we realized we needed that too, so that we knew who, you know, very clearly each other's responsibilities. Mm. I think the big one that we've learned over the years as well is not necessarily bringing work home. And that's a challenge, one we still face now. But you spend every waking hour talking about work if you're not careful. So you can, you know, find yourself stood in the kitchen in the evening still talking about work, sometimes on a Saturday and a Sunday as well. So we've been quite mindful to kind of set some parameters there as well and say, actually, do you know what? And I think it works a lot better now as well that John is predominantly focused on remanufactured parts, that there's less crossover there. So when we were both involved at Urban Element, there was definitely a tendency to spend most evenings talking about work, and most weekends. I can see John smiling. I don't know if there's anything that I've missed there, John. What would you add to that?
No, I think I'm an absolute delight to work with.
Diplomatic.
You know, nothing really to add, just to extend what Tash is saying there. And it is just simply asking your partner whether this is a shareholders conversation, a director's conversation, an operational conversation, or is this just a husband and wife conversation? And what I mean by that is, does your other half just want to have a rant? Have they had a pretty crappy day and they just want to get home and say, this has gone wrong, this has gone wrong? They're not looking for a solution. They're not looking for help or guidance or advice or I told you so, certainly not I told you so. They're just talking to you as your loved one. And I got that wrong for so many years. And we haven't done this on our own. We've had a lot of support. We've had some counseling around this. So the other thing I'd add is don't be afraid to say it's the business is causing us problems at home. Don't hide behind it. Talk about it. Find other people in a similar situation to you. Get some mentoring, get some support, get some counseling, because it is challenging, but the rewards can be huge as well. You get to spend more time with the person that you fell in love with.
Yeah, but also I think you can very much trust each other as well, which isn't something you can always say, but you know that you definitely have each other's back. That's just kind of a given. So once you can get, if you can work well together, like we've sort of finally come to the point where we can, it's only taken 10 years, then I think it can, there's huge rewards, especially if you're both really good at what you do, and you have different strengths, because John and I are both very, very different. I think, you know, typically opposites attract, and you can probably tell John enjoys the talking side of things and I'm less of a talker, but we can then balance each other out and we can, basically support each other with our strengths and weaknesses. And that's a real, real win when you can work together.
Absolutely. I think the saddest thing to say is that we've run out of time, because I would have loved to talk for another hour with you both, because I think you've both shared such insight and such practical advice for the listeners. I think one of the things we always say is about having your notepad, and certainly I think we could have filled two or three notepads over the last hour. But thank you so much, you both. Really appreciate your time and expertise with the listeners. So if you are just tuning in, I definitely recommend listening back. We've had John Ellard of Reman Parts and we've had Natasha Ellard of Urban Element. So if you enjoyed this show, please do tune back in next Sunday. So we are on the radio and online every Sunday at 11 a.m. There is also a podcast version available via all your favourite podcast platforms, which is released on the Monday morning. And do look out for the video format, which is posted on the Get Radio Facebook page and the website every Tuesday. Next week, we're going to be talking about something a little bit different. So we're welcoming back James Butler from retirement to talk about planning for retirement, goal setting, and also about having a plan B. So I'm sure that'll be a good one. But for now, enjoy the rest of your Sunday and we'll see you next week.